This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 680, brought to you by listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 680. I am Ryan Haupt, and I am here with Joshua Flanagan.
Oh, God, there's another person. Thank God.
I'm here to help. Backup has arrived.
And you know how hard it is to talk for an hour straight? It's fun. Sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't believe you for a second that it was hard. You might have not been happy about it by the end, but I don't believe the fundamental premise there.
That's true. That's true. It's physically difficult.
I can say we, because now there's two of us, are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that the pick of the week. We'll talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, and if we have time, maybe some listener mail. And it's going to be a lot of fun, but it's also going to be spoiler-filled, and we have a lot of books this week that you may not want spoiled. So if that's a thing you worry about, you know, pause the show, go read your books, come back. Otherwise, just enjoy it. It's going to be fine. Studies have shown that if you know what's going to happen in the thing you're consuming, you actually enjoy it more, not less.
Is that true?
That is true.
So you're telling me that those trailers aren't jerkwad devices?
The movie, I mean, they are, but that's because they're actively trying to manipulate you.
Okay.
As opposed to just knowing what the story is. Because the human, we like a puzzle. So if you know what the answer is, you can figure out the puzzle as you read it. And that's fun for us. That's fun for our monkey brains.
Okay.
Anyway.
Fact, man. That's why we have you here.
It wasn't a fact. It was a study that suggested as such. But anyway, this week you had the pick, and whatever you picked is a fact.
Well, see, the thing is, because I will defer to you on these things, I'll just go, okay, I believe you could tell me anything, and I'm going to be like, well, he knows what he's talking about.
But I'm not going to lie to you, Josh.
I do trust you in that that sense, too. Pick of the week this week is Action Comics 1010, and here you go. I'm going to tell you exactly why. It was fun. It was, you know, there was nothing brilliant about it. I basically what you have is a story here of Clark Kent and Lois Lane on an undercover mission, and he's dressed as Chaz and she's Wendy, and I don't know, but they kept saying Chaz over and over again, and the more they did it, the more I laughed. And then they got to the point where he changed into Superman, but he kept the Chaz stuff on his head, and I was like, hell yes. This is a job for Super Chaz.
Do you think Clark is good at accents, or is he pretty bad?
I think he's not great at it.
Yeah, I think so too. He's from Kansas.
Yeah, I just
not
think
that people
he's...
from Kansas can't be good at accents. I don't think Clark's that guy.
I think he's kind of stiff. He's very good at being himself. He's super comfortable in his own skin, so therefore being somebody else is difficult for him, unlike our friend Bruce Wayne in Matches Malone. You know, he doesn't really want to be himself, so he can do a different thing. Have you noticed I do a lot of voices? Anyway, Superman... I don't know where this came from. I don't actually understand. I didn't read a lot of the Spiral stuff. I kind of get it. There were sort
it
of
has hit. A checkmate vibe.
Yeah. Well, at the beginning there was the checkmate roll call.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning, and you know they said on the left side of the title page it says DC Comics proudly presents Checkmate in the Nemesis of my nemesis, which is great. And then like there's the little down the side is Mr. Holt, Michael Holt, Mr. Terrific is the White King, Amanda Waller is the White Queen.
It's Dr. Holt.
Yeah, well it says Mr. here. He's Mr. Terrific though.
That's true. That's true. He's one of those trademark. He's one of those PhD characters who insists on going by Mr. like Reed Richards.
So there's a little checkmate thing there and then spirals along the other side. And it's all also because, Steve Epting's drawing it. It's kind of got a 70s vibe, going on. And I don't know, I don't know exactly how we got here with all of this. I know that there's sort of been in the background the whole time, but I like that. I just felt like I had picked up a random, I don't know if you had this experience, but when I was a kid, I would get piles of comic books. I don't know from where, my mom would be dating some dude and then they'd just give me a box of random comic books from the, 70s and early 80s and I would just read them. And that's what this felt like to me. Kind of a wacky spy undercover story, but it's Superman in the middle there and they're trying to hunt down Leviathan and see what it is and there's no answers but also at the same time it's just silly enough that I give Bendis the credit for knowing that this is funny. To have him in a beard and a fuzzy hair and it's not a members only jacket, but I'm thinking that it's like one. Have you been reading these at all?
I have. I think I'm the opposite of Connor where I'm liking the Superman book a bit more.
Uh-huh.
But it's a game of inches and this is also, this is very fun. I haven't quite grabbed on to the Leviathan storyline.
I can see why. It's very, I don't know that I have either, but I've liked the things surrounding it. I don't know who DEO director Bones is, but I really like when he's on screen.
I remember him from the Checkmate Outsiders when Rucka and Judd Winnick were doing all those books. He was a big player in those, but I don't really know much about him as a character. But he was dropping a lot of Adam Strange hints, and I know how you feel about that guy.
I do. There's a lot of things here that are fun. And Clark and Lois are being, sort of flirty with each other as they, this is like their little bondage date, they're like, ooh, it's our little secret. It's, it's just kind of, it's a lot of weird, funny things. And as I kept reading it, I kept turning the page and I was like, this is great. I don't know where anybody stands. I don't know what's going on. I don't know why he put his Superman outfit on, but kept his mask on. It's just comics, man. It was like good old fashioned comics to me. And there's probably things that are wrong with this and things that aren't great about it. But at the end of the day, I read comics I like this week. This is literally the only one that I was like, that's my pick of the week. When I was reading it, I had that thought. But as you're telling by listening to this, I don't really have a good reason for it. But I was sure of it, which doesn't happen a lot.
That's nice.
Yeah.
It must be nice to have a moment where you don't have to completely self-examine every little thought in your head.
I mean, it's rare.
speaking of from one friend to another, this is, I'm letting you behind the curtain here a little too. So, I get that.
Yeah. And it really was a thing where, the first shot of them is sort of they're flying down from, in London and Lois is like, I'm Peter Panning. And he's like, well, I'm the one. Yeah. I'm like Clark gets to be a little bit of a square compared to Lois. And I thought, oh, this is kind of fun. And then, at the moment that he pulls off his clothes and goes into Superman, and that dude, their contact, the guy with the headdress and the gun, sort of his eyes wide open. He's like, oh, my God, Chaz was Superman the entire time. And I just thought, well, that's the one. That's because it wasn't like trying to be cute. It wasn't trying to be clever. It wasn't like trying to impress me. It just was what it was. And I think Steve Epting was exactly the right artist for that kind of thing.
An old bookstore, a laptop, a bottle of whiskey and a gun is also my ideal work environment.
Yes. So. Yeah. Yeah. And also he's got some extra weapons as well.
And a bag of money. So that's all I need.
Yep. So I'm cool with all this. That's really all there was to it. I had fun. And
Steve Epting is also, he's drawn those shorts. He is not He's ignoring. Are they officially back now? Has the style guide been updated?
You know what? I don't pay attention to that. And Connor's the guy who keeps tabs on that. Basically, I notice when something's wrong. And if it's not, then I'm fine. Because this Superman outfit just, I look at it and go, oh, that's Superman.
Yep.
So I don't notice that it's correct because it's correct. I notice when things are not correct. If he was flying around with no shorts on, then I would be like, oh, that's weird. But I might not know why. But yeah, no, this is just straight up Superman. The outfit, which is like the belt is the same. There's no extras. His cuff on his sleeve has a little pointy to it. I noticed that.
Yep. Which is a little holdover from the armor thing.
I'll let him have it. The boots look good, but I'm trying to see if there's anywhere where they actually showed the boots, and he basically kept them in. This is one of those things where I see the Superman boots and the artist, and I just think, I bet he's just obfuscating them because he's not sure what to do. Like, I don't know how
there
they
might
want
also be
boots.
some colorist decisions happening there.
No, maybe, but I tend to think the colorists don't go in with the inks like that. I feel like the black is the domain of the penciler. Actually, there's an inker on this, isn't there? Nope, no, there isn't. I don't know. I like the colors. I like Brad Anderson's blue and red choices. I feel like there must be this is the color that the blue has to be, at least in ideal light. Because it looks
right.
Yeah, because
it's a little lighter. It's a little, it's closer to Robin's egg than I think a lot of people tend to portray it as.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It's a good comic book. It was fun. I have no complaints about it at all. And
I think he's all right.
I think it's great. He's been the Superman guy for me. And I, the only thing that bums me out is that I don't think that that's like everyone. I think that people are like, yeah, I guess it's okay. And for some reason, I'm, you know, Connor and I are just enjoying the heck out of it. But as I've said many times, you should not be catering to us.
I'm a little younger than you guys. And issue 7 of Superman was my pick of the week when Connor passed me the baton. So,
yeah,
right there with you guys.
Yeah. Well, you've been brought up in our system.
True. I'm from the farm team, definitely.
So I don't know that you're unbiased, but we all came up in it together, to be fair. So I think it's probably better that you are here instead of Connor to discuss with some objectivism Heroes in Crisis number 8.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
I mean, I'm more objective than Connor. You weren't texting me about breaking electronic devices, so.
Yeah. Yeah, there was, yeah, okay, so, all right, we've been back and forth on Heroes in Crisis this whole time in terms of it's interesting, not really loving it as it fits in the context of these characters in the DC universe, but accepting that this is canon, what we've had here is a situation where, not unlike McNulty in The Wire season 5, Wally West done fucked up. And then made it much worse. And I think it is difficult to accept.
I don't know. I might have to go back and read this all as a single chunk. But I'm a little confused why this is the penultimate issue. Because it feels like I finally get sort of what this series has been about this whole time. But like, I'm now having a hard time to remember what are the 7 issues that got us to this point and why weren't we here sooner and how can you wrap up something this momentous in a single issue?
It's a good question because I feel like it's definitely the kind of thing I bet that there are clues and stuff that were all dropped, but I wouldn't do that until after you read the next issue. I don't think that it will help you enjoy the next issue. I think if you read through all of it and it's resolved in some way that's satisfactory, then you go back through and you're like, oh, I'm cool.
So do we want to spoil?
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, you have to. So if you haven't read it, I'm sorry. Go ahead. How would you explain this?
Wally was living at Sanctuary. He wanted to figure out what the data they were hiding was, so he used his super speed to piece back the broken down bits of destroyed data that Sanctuary says they don't keep. And then in doing so, he learned everything that was happening and somehow let loose the Speed Force and killed all the people who are at Sanctuary and then went forward in time to kill himself and bring his own body back in time to give himself a few days to fix it. and made both Harley and Booster think that they were the ones who had accidentally killed him. Or killed everyone, I think. Struggling.
Yeah, no, I think that it's better than I would have done, just right away. And the problem with this is obviously that for many longtime readers, they would say, Wally wouldn't do that.
I'm inclined to agree with them. I did like the whole idea that because he's worked with Barry for so long, he can fake a crime scene that would fool even sure. Barry and Batman.
I think that's logically fun, all those
that's
things.
That's a fun idea.
Yes, it is.
I also
the acceptable answer is that he's all messed up since he came back because he's got a memory of his family that doesn't exist and didn't exist or whichever, and that has been a problem for him.
Yeah,
which is why he was in there in the first place.
My fear was that this series was going to bring the family back, and I just don't know that there are stories there that I'm interested in for Wally, for yes. me and my relationship with this character. And so this idea that he accidentally killed a bunch of people is definitely not a twist I was expecting. And so I can't tell if I like this better or not as better than the kids coming back.
Well, okay, let's accept the fact that he made a mistake and it resulted in a bad thing. Okay, I can work with that. I don't necessarily want to read it, but I can accept it. Second part of that being that he tried to fix it, which I kind of get, but kills himself. I don't buy that. And then thirdly, the thing that he does to Booster and Harley seems wildly out of character to me. Now, the one extenuating factor that I'm going to go with here is that this is not the last issue. And I think there's a really good chance that there's a lot of red herring going on here. I think. Or maybe I'm just telling myself that. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. He's a big fish in a suit that's red. You know, like...
I was surprised by how little I missed Clayman for Mitch Garrett stepping in.
Well, yeah. Well, so that's another very interesting flash fact here. Mitch, drawing this, Mitch is a big fan of Wally West. Mitch's kid is named...
Jai.
For Wally West. And I don't think I'm talking about school. I think that that's public knowledge. So it seems an odd mix if this is going to be the story that destroys Wally West. And I feel like Tom King is savvy enough to know what he's doing right now. And people are acting like he's really destroying everything and blowing it, but I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt because I know that he's self-aware enough to know exactly what he's doing.
Oh, so you weren't one of the people he had to report on Twitter for threats?
No. Not at all. And yeah. I believe those people are not savvy enough to be able to recognize patterns in comic books. And you know, like, I don't know that.
Or, yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It's also like classic showmanship to do this in your second to last issue.
Yep.
And you know, we just read his Mr. Miracle, you know, like what is may not be. What mm-hmm. it may seem, you know, like there's a lot of clues that if you take everything on face value... That's one thing, but the show ain't over. And if this was his next big thing, you know, like his next sort of planned project, here's my, you know, he's done a bunch of these in a row. You've got the Vision and you had the Sheriff of Babylon and you had Mr. Miracle and you have this is his you know, big foray into this. Oh, and the Catwoman wedding. I don't know. I just don't think it's that thoughtless. I don't think it could be, but we won't know until the end of the next one. Now, it might not be good, might not be something you like, but I don't think that it's going to be as detrimental as this seems. But that's just...
Yeah, I think that's a very fair interpretation of what's happening. Yeah.
You're right, though. It looked real good. I didn't miss Clayman in the least. I think Mitch Garrett's with assists on a few pages from Travis Moore. Mitch doing all the colors. Like, it looked good. It was consistent, but it was his own thing. I think... It's going to be easy. It's really easy to make your judgment now, but I don't think we're capable of doing that until we read it. That's my measured response. Are you you're into the Wildstorm? Yes.
Oh, I am loving this book right? so much.
It's gotten better every single issue. I remember when the first issue came out of this, Ron and Connor read it with me. Both of them, Connor, Ron was still on the show, and they were both like, "Yeah," and I was like, "I think this might be good," but it's so metered. Like it's two issues ago, I was like, "Oh, I get it."
It is so ballsy for a creator like Warren Ellis to take one of my favorite creations of his and just say, yeah, I'm just going to do that again, but as a comic of this modern era instead of the modern era that I basically ushered in by doing the book in the first place.
Yeah.
Like that is a big dick energy. And he is pulling it off, and I am here for it.
Yeah, you know, I was looking at the pages in this, and sort of the authority gets together in this, in its entirety, and you know, we had the four
missing Swift. I noticed we're missing. Well, so he kind of has combined Swift and the Doctor into one character.
Yes, I think Swift is the one who doesn't really like in
retro girl. Yeah.
In retrospect, though, I don't know that she really has a place or is all that terribly memorable because I hadn't even noticed that. Combined all the sort of those primary characters with Apollo and Midnighter, and then all the Io and Skywatch people pop out of the sky. I think I get some of those mixed up. It doesn't matter. Big fight. But I noticed what a extreme difference the art of John Davis Hunt is compared to Brian Hitch.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's things where it just feels like it doesn't look like a major scale thing. It feels totally toned down in a way. Like his character work is so small and his line work is so different than what Brian Hitch did. It's a complete and 180 degree visual contrast to what we've seen from these characters before. And it just looks quaint in some places, but I feel like that's the point. You know, there was one when the page when all the ships show up and there's the big thing and then, you know, Apollo crashes through one of them was cool. But, you know, there's also the sort of old timey flying saucers there, which they've seeded in
great.
Earlier part. Yeah, it's just like we're recognizing, yes, this is now sillier in this context.
The flying saucers feels very planetary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's just,
I don't, it's the only, this shouldn't bother me. This shouldn't bother me, he said before, an absurd statement. A lot of the characters, even though they are very similar to how they were in the Authority, they have different color hair, and I can't get over it.
I understand that, because you're looking
Apollo
for...
I want Apollo to have white hair. Yeah. Midnighter, his hair would change a lot, because I guess he was dying it, you know, Jenny Sparks was a blonde. We did, I think, in the stuff after Ellis left the book,
but not initially.
Earlier, before that, exactly. It's really mostly just, it's Apollo and Jack Hawksmoor. For whatever reason, I don't like shaggy-haired Jack Hawksmoor, and I don't like brunette Apollo.
I don't think I mind either of those things. The only thing that's harder for me is that the visual signifiers that I look for to tell who is who are not the same, which makes it harder, I think.
Yeah.
For me to follow.
Well, Jack Hawksmoor is also just one of my favorite.
Yeah.
One of my favorite characters of that era and all of comics, really. I think it's just a brilliant idea, well executed throughout. So
yeah, and I like this version of him. I don't think it's different and it changes.
He's not as
it.
Cocksure as
Yeah, I really like that. Cocksure. But you know, I like the fact that he's actually completely useless in this one.
Mm-hmm. Because they're not in a city.
There's no city infrastructure. I have nothing to work with here.
I'm gonna get sick. Just gonna start throwing up black sludge until you put me back where I belong.
And I it was fun. I liked it.
I bet you know some New Yorkers that would happen to if they tried to leave.
Oh, no. It turns out they don't think that's going to happen. But as soon as they get out in the real air, they're like, wait a minute, what is this? And I was like, this is air that doesn't smell like human vomit.
Ah, so you see, the spell can be broken.
I think so. Like if you can get them out. But I don't know. It depends on how deep Queens you're from. I am loving Fantastic Four. And I know we've talked about Dan Slott and his relative merits to a reader such as myself, but I have really been totally... I dropped off the Iron Man book he was doing because eventually I was like, that's enough. But, you know, this is... I worry that this is sort of the end of a big Doom arc. And, you know, the Doom arc is that he captures Galactus to harness his energy and then he puts the Fantastic Four, you know, in his torture chambers, and it's super classic and it goes completely against the Doctor Doom that we've been living with for 5 years. But who cares? It was super classic, and I worry that the next arc could never live up to this because this is us still getting the family back together, big Doom fight, Galactus is there, and I was like, all right, this is what we need. it'll be really interesting to see what he brings next, I think.
Yeah, I think my only issue with this, and I've said it every time I've come on, this book seems to be the book that is always on the rundown whenever I'm on the show. I feel like I've talked about the last four or five issues. And I never really thought the stuff with the kids was working. I know they used it as a demon-based Deus Ex Machina in this issue, but I don't know. It's the sort of thing where it's like either just incorporate the kids as part of the team because they're crazy powerful or figure out a way to get them completely off the board. Because to have them sidelined and to know that they're being sidelined and to know, and for them to be aware that that's pointless just gets on my nerves a little bit.
I think that's completely valid. And I may have overlooked it because I really was only thinking about the pages with the Fantastic Four and Doctor Doom. You know, but I think you're not wrong.
What's interesting is this book, you know, this issue ends with the end. And so I guess the next issue is going to be the War of the Realms tie-in, but it's interesting to legitimately not know what the next arc is going to be. Because I feel like so often comics, they're dropping hints or the last thing, you know, the last panel is the next threat or that sort of thing. So it's kind of nice just to like put a bow on it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think because there has been so little recent history with these characters, like I just have no idea. So maybe he'll keep doing stories like this. Maybe the next one will be the Mole Man or something equivalent. You know, we'll just do some Fantastic Four stuff, which I'm fine. I really did like the you know, Doom has everybody in their own traps, you know, and they all, you know, it's sort of a classic, like they all learn from each other. Here's what we did. You know, we are a family, you know, and it's totally cliched, but it worked.
Right. Like Doom just didn't anticipate that Johnny would be good at a thing that he thought Sue would be good at.
Right. Yeah.
And like and that basically you could just run that clockwise or counterclockwise through the whole team. So there's each one of them has their little character moment where they're able to incorporate a lesson that someone else in the family had taught them. And that's the one thing, because Doom doesn't have a family, that's the one thing he couldn't see coming.
Yep. And then I liked the bit where Galactus took off and Doom can't understand why he wouldn't exact his revenge. He's like, he gave his word. He swore an oath. That's his thing. He's gonna live up to it, no matter how much he hungers. Which I thought was good.
Yep.
You're a man of science. We've talked about this a lot. Almost to the point of flogging it so that I'm guessing no one wants to hear it. But I did think of that when I added Skyward number 12 to the rundown.
I have been reading this series since it began, and I love it. I think it's a delight, and I recommend it to people all the time.
That's great. It really is it's sort of my favorite kind of science fiction in that sense. I mean, I'm assuming that the idea that the gravity field just goes away is absurd, but if you just accept that, then everything else that happens in here may not be what would actually happen, but at least there are reasons for it.
Oh, totally. Well, I mean, if gravity stopped working, you wouldn't just be bouncing along the surface of the Earth. We would all just be instantly out in space as the Earth continued its orbit around the sun.
Point.
Or would we? Because actually, Earth would probably get flung off into deep space away from the sun, just like a you know, Olympian throwing that thing, the ball at the end of the chain.
Uh-huh.
When you let go of a thing in orbit, it goes straight outward. so we would all just be instantly rocketed into space or smashed by the Earth itself if you were on the you know, the orbiting side of it. So it's all absurd, but it's one of those things where, like, I think there's no way this hasn't come up on the show before, but good science fiction, you take one thing and break it or tweak it or mess it up in a way that generates the story from there.
Yeah, and this is the Back to the Future rule. Like, if you look at it too close, it doesn't work. So don't do that.
Yeah, just have fun with it.
Yeah.
It's a cool coming-of-age. It's a coming-of-age story. We're learning about this new world that exists based on this one major thing about our society changing. And, yeah, it's just a lot of fun. The art's gorgeous. It's interesting. I read the back matter in the last issue, and the author admitted that bringing the mother back was never part of the plan. And so this is very openly a retcon, but, you know, he just said, like, once I realized that this was the way I could propel the story forward, it was the only thing that made sense. And so this was
not a retcon if they didn't tell us that, though.
Yeah, I guess it was a retcon in that it was never the plan. That's true. You're right. I mean, we never saw the body, and that's the rule.
Yeah, that's the way that I took it. My only problem with this is that the wife doesn't age in any way. And
she has a few more lines on her face, but she's still a very beautiful woman for it having been 10 years.
Yeah, and Lee Garbett, I think, is a great artist, but also because he draws kind of sketchy to begin with, I don't think those lines were super clear to me, and it was a little difficult to tell the difference between her and her daughter in this.
Yeah.
I think that, like, there needs to be more visual distinction. Their hair is a little different. Their skin is a little different, but they're very similar looking. And I think that that was a problem. There needs to be more differentiation between those people. When you don't have superhero costumes to rely on, you really have to go out of your way, you know, to you know, here's blonde white guy. Here's, you know, whatever. Like, you have to show me who we're talking. So it was a little, like, I tried to ignore it, but I kept thinking about it. I was like, wait, who are we looking at? Okay, no, that's still the mom. And then the mom goes and see the daughter. I was like, they look exactly the same. That's all I had. Like, the sort of, there's the drawing of sort of the day that it happens again. And if I'm the artist on this book, I'm like, just give me those to draw as much as possible. You know, where, you know, huge chunks of ground and trucks and cars are floating in the air and people are escaping. The bit with the dog is touching and that's his actual dog, which is sad. the idea of the underground. That's one of my favorite parts of Interstellar, is sort of recreating Earth suburbia, and this is sort of another version of that, where they're literally up there painting clouds and things like that, and that's how they got away with it. And then the moral question of, like, do we tell people about it? This was designed for them. Do we let them in? There's a lot going on here. There's many, many things, and it's all pretty intriguing.
To me, this scratches the same itch that Why the Last Man did.
Sure, yeah, I can see that.
It's a big world that I'm really interested in exploring, with some characters that I am growing to like more and more with every issue.
Mm-hmm. I think there could be a little more of that. Like, I think it's, we're only 12 issues in, but there's definitely, like, I feel like I need to get to know the characters a little more. We're spending a little more time in the world explaining it. But maybe this is a chance, now that we've introduced some more people, you can have them bounce off each other a little more, I think. Like, you get the daughter okay, but everybody else, you're not, I'm not sure about. The business guy is kind of interesting, because we're not sure where he's coming from or going all the time.
And getting trapped in a water bubble without gravity is one of my legit actual fears in this life. So there's always a chance that's going to happen.
Explain this to me.
Because you can't swim out of it. You'd be stuck. Like, if it's a sphere of water and you're trapped in the center, if you kick in any one direction, you're not going to be able to. I don't think, if I understand the gravity and the physics right, you would just be stuck in this. The bubble would just move with you, because water's kind of clingy, and you probably wouldn't be able to break the surface tension and actually get out.
Yeah. And if you like kicked your arms and legs like you were swimming forward, you wouldn't move within the bubble, because the capillarity on the surface.
I think the bubble would just move inside with you, or you wouldn't, because there's no gravity, you wouldn't actually be pushing against the bubble, so you wouldn't actually be able to move within it.
Could you like create inertia by sort of swinging your body one direction? If it hit something, then the splash would disperse it, and you might, or you could, yeah, grab the thing.
Yeah, if you could grab something, if you could grab an object, you could probably pull yourself out that way. But if you're stuck in, like, the center of a thing, like the center of a room, I always imagined it all happening on a space station. I never imagined it happening here. And I think that is a scene in that Passengers movie with Jennifer Lawrence, and I can't remember how they solve it, because that was a bad movie.
I wanted to see it, but I didn't, because I understood that it was a bad movie.
It was a bad movie, but it's a fear. Just the idea of being, you know, trapped in a thing of water, drowning inches away from rescue, just scary.
I hear you.
Trying to think about it.
Let's think about happy thoughts. Let's think about support. Let's think about people contributing, being part of things.
Isn't it weird that when you patronize a business, you're doing them a kindness, but when you patronize a person, you're being a jerk? Well, if you thought about that, maybe you should go check out patreon.com/ifanboy, where you can do both. And the patreon.com/ifanboy is where people can go and support the show directly with a monthly payment that makes doing the show possible. It is, as a fellow creator, it is hard to emphasize how much it's just like a security blanket for your creative endeavor, to have that little Patreon run in the background and knowing you're getting some money for all the work that gets put into the show. There's a stretch goal coming up. It's been the stretch goal for a little while, so maybe we can get a push to make it happen. That, in addition to the monthly non-comics media podcast, which is part of that stretch goal, we're going to upload, I'm not going to help at all, we'll upload all of the missing full-length video shows and minis to our YouTube channel and re-embed them on the website. That's a non-trivial task, my friends. Would you like to wear iFanboy on your body? You can! iFanboy.com or iFanboy.threadless.com, where there are currently 7 designs, including, is it still the best-selling Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters? I don't see those numbers, Josh, so I'm not sure if that's still the case. But
it is the case by a great margin.
So maybe you need an If One Is Electro, so you can explain that to people and then walk away, because the explanation will probably do very little to actually help them understand. If you're not looking for a t-shirt that you have to explain and aren't interested in becoming a recurring patron, there's always the opportunity to just give a little bit of cash via PayPal. It's very simple, very straightforward, and very helpful as well. And Amazon.com is a website you may have heard of. We're not talking about the river in South America. We're talking about the megastore, worldwide megastore that is invading my hometown of Washington, D.C. And if you want to take a little few pennies out of Jeffy Bezos's pockets, well, you can do that by going to ifanboy.com/Amazon. And everything you buy, including all the books featured on these episodes and the Book Split episodes, will go towards getting a little money back to the iFanboy guys. So just a few pennies. They don't come out of your pocket. They come out of Jeffy Bezos' pocket. And he's not paying taxes, so he can afford it.
That is the case. I had brought up Bad Luck Chuck premiere issue at the last time one came out, and I thought, oh, I might read it, and I picked it up, and I read the second issue, which came out this week by Leila Gwen and artist Matthew Dow Smith, and I get a strong Alias vibe from this, but I like the conceit that when she's around people, things go poorly, and you shouldn't write the number 13 because that's really bad, and sometimes people die, and there's just this, I don't know, somewhere between the writing and the artist, there's a real weight to the sadness that the main character feels about her lot, and she's just got to deal with it, and she there's a begrudging acceptance, but she's not happy about it, and then she's contrasted with this other girl who is about to become super rich, but her mom wants to kill her to get the money, and I like all of those things that are going on here, even though I'm not entirely sure what the plot is.
Yeah, I read the first issue and did not intend on picking up the second issue, but I went ahead and read it once I saw that it was in the script. Mm-hmm. And I find this book completely impenetrable. I feel like I cannot tell what's going on. I honestly wonder, like, did the file get screwed up and there are pages missing or out of order? Because I just cannot follow anything that's happening.
Yeah, Connor kind of said the same thing to me. And I was like, I don't know why. I think it's because when I read a new thing, I expect to hate it. And when I don't, I'm like, well, let's see what we've got here.
Fun fact, that's how Josh also handles meeting new people.
That's exactly correct. No, that's true. I didn't mind it, but I can't disagree with what you just said. So that's fine.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I don't know, I can't connect it directly, but I noticed you said before we came on here that you were catching up on Maneaters number 8, and I almost said, don't bother.
Really? I like these really? Sort of in-world issues.
So,
yeah, I find them fun.
How would you describe what this is? So not the overall, but this issue.
There were a couple issues back where they did basically the entire issue was a magazine for teen girls set in this world. And this is, this issue, the cover of the issue says, what's happening to me and can it be stopped? With a sad emoticon face with a pink bow on it. And basically this issue is an excerpt from that book that's a book that is clearly used to scare girls into following the protocol of drinking the hormone-laced water to not get their periods and turn into cat monsters and kill people. So this may work for me because, I'm opening myself up here a little bit. I had a very similar style book all about growing into Christian manhood when I was growing up, and I am really sad that I never kept a copy of it because it was bonkers. I'm not saying that trying to grow into a fine Christian man is bonkers. I'm saying this book was bonkers, and it is very, very reminiscent of the way this was written. I think Chelsea Kane's probably getting a lot of real-world inspiration from the sort of things that are used to just scare the bejesus out of children into following a very, specific idea of the world, and this skewered that very well in my mind.
And I think that you're not wrong about all those things. I think it was well done. I understood what this was supposed to be. I don't really have a lot of experience with it. I have a hard time when, over 8 issues in, they've already sort of done this once. Like, I really do want to just read the story. And to me, this is way too early in the run to have this kind of indulgence, because I'm trying to stick with the story, and it's one of many, many comic books I have. And listen, this is a place where it's creator-owned. You can be experimental. You can do whatever you want, but it doesn't work for me. I tell the story. Within the story, there are all of these divergences and making all these sort of points And I get what they're going for, but to me, like it takes away from the strength of the thing, of what it actually is.
Yeah, I can see that. That's totally like, valid.
I mean, this is not a great example. When I was reading Preacher for the first time, and you're just flying, and you get to book 4.
When he's in the town?
No, I was going to say you get to book 4, and it's the Saint of Killers arc, which is awesome on its own, but it just rips you right out of where you were, and for a whole trade paperback, basically. But that was 20 something issues in, it wasn't even the main issues. It was a mini series on the side. That's the feeling of whoa, works in the larger context of the novel. But here I feel like it's too early and it's too much. I was like, what's going to happen next? And I got this issue and I was like, oh, nothing's going to happen next. We don't know.
I think that interpretation I agree with entirely. I just still enjoyed this issue in spite of that. I agree with that criticism, but yes. I enjoyed this regardless.
We have talked about Runaways an awful lot when you're on this show.
It's so good.
It is good. It is very good.
It makes me feel so old.
Yeah,
I don't dress like this. I don't have a man bun.
I don't even feel like that's a thing anymore, though. Is it a thing?
Well, maybe Chase is, maybe they are, maybe they're signaling that Chase is lame, but because we're so old, we're like, as far as I can tell, Chase still looks like one of those cool kids I keep saying.
Yeah, like, I think it's not cool, and if you see somebody doing it now, they're way behind, but I might be wrong, and I couldn't tell you one way or the other.
No, my hair is much closer to Gib. two horns coming out.
The addition of Gib has been fun. And I really like the way that this was all presented with the, you know, like he hungers.
I don't know that a velociraptor would be that excited by a donut, but we've never seen one, so maybe they would be.
I mean, donuts.
As far as we know, velociraptors and donuts existed many millions of years apart, so maybe it was just a missed connection waiting to happen.
I mean, it might be, but, you know, yeah, donuts are good, and that might be so universal we can't even comprehend how universal it is. But they're not interdimensionally good, apparently,
right,
according to Gib.
Yes, Gib is not having it.
What I like about this book is that it is not afraid to take chances with the characters that would make them unlikable. Like, it's not afraid to destroy these characters. It would be really easy to make a book where all of these people get along and things are difficult, but they face it together. Instead, you have a book where, like, Gert is, you don't know where the hell she is, and then you've got Victor. Victor ostensibly kills himself in this issue, because he's having a hard time. And so, like, on the surface, it looks like it's one kind of book, but underneath it, it's all that sort of turmoil of teenage angst and adolescence and stuff. And I think
and Carolina's basically screwing up at school and can't maintain her job, living in this underground bunker with her friends, and her actual college roommate hasn't seen her in a while. And it's like, oh man, we all know what it's like to show up an hour late for a thing that you know you've been screwing up already. Mm-hmm. That's not a great feeling.
Yeah.
This captures it well. I don't know. I agree that the final scene is very heavily coded as a suicide attempt, but there's like stuff growing in the water.
Yeah.
So I think even if that was what Victor's intent was, it seems clear that something different is going to happen.
I
like that. I like that we're seeing Molly grow up. Like, she's actually aging, and it's being handled well.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I agree with you there entirely.
Princess power.
Last week, Jason Aaron did an issue of Thor. It was all about Loki in sort of the midst of the War of the Realms thing. And I thought, okay, I kind of want to see the story go on, but I know why you're doing it here, because you've got the War of the Realms. So this week in Avengers, instead of getting an Avengers story in the middle of War of the Realms, we got a Squadron Supreme story.
Are you a Squadron Supreme guy?
Not really.
Yeah.
I've had some experience with them. Those of you listening at home, these are basically DC analogs in the Marvel world. But I never really got a handle on them for what they're supposed to be. They show up in different forms depending on how the writer wants to do it. So I thought that this was good. It was actually really good Ed McGuinness art too. I think he was very right for it. But at the same time, I was like, what are we doing this for? There's a whole thing going on right now. That's how I felt.
Yeah.
And that kind of bugged me, because he did it last week in Thor also. And it's fine to do this story somewhere, but this is the Avengers book. And on a week that the largest superhero movie in the history of the world came out, I think I was hungering for some Avengers.
I get that. Yeah, this felt like a weird left turn. And there's a weird Phil Coulson Mephistopheles, is that the character?
Yes. Mephisto.
So I don't know, and it did it to be continued, but it's like I don't really want to continue this story. I want to go back to the Avengers.
Like, make them be the Avengers in the War of the Realms. I get why that's all crossing over. That's fine. But this feels like a weird time for that left turn. And I feel like it would be scheduled enough so that seems like a weird choice. Again.
Agreed.
Wasn't bad. But, you know, there we are. We got to keep moving. Let's go quickly over into Star Wars Corner. Should probably skip Star Wars Corner, but I don't want to because we have here Star Wars Galaxy's Edge number one, the book that is named for the Disney parks that are going to be opening.
Did not know that when I went into it.
Uh-huh.
Was not happy to find out at the end that that's what this was.
I let that go. They've done other comic books that are based on Disney rides or attractions, I believe. They've done a Pirates of the Caribbean and another one. I know there's a few of them that they did a while back. And also they're owned by Disney, so what are you going to do?
I know.
Taken on its own, though, this was just a Han Solo and Chewbacca adventure. It was written by Ethan Sachs, whom was lauded by us for doing Old Man Hawkeye and is currently doing Old Man Quill, and is drawn by Will Sliney of Ireland. And I enjoyed it well enough. This was a story of smuggling some Sarlaccs, big Sarlaccs, baby Sarlaccs. Maybe one of those between the line stories that we didn't necessarily need to tell, but I don't consider the Sarlacc to be so sacred that we can't play around with it and explore it a little more.
Yeah. I thought there were some art issues and some storytelling issues. You know, the first panel with Han, his face just melted plastic. It's not a good drawing, and it gets better throughout the book. He looks a little less melty, but I had a few storytelling issues. Like, there's a scene where Chewie grabs the bowcaster, and it's unclear to me, at least, if he had the bowcaster and had just dropped it, or is this supposed to be like the moment Chewie gets his bowcaster? I just had a few storytelling issues, a few art issues. I never need to see Wookiee fingers. I don't know why they keep thinking I want to see those.
Oh yeah, look at that.
Lots of Wookiee fingers.
I know what you're saying with the faces. I feel like some of them are good and some of them aren't. And I feel like, in a way, these are like the most challenging of comic books to draw.
They have to be, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, we know these faces. We know them so well. And they can't... Like, they need... Like, artists need to make a decision. Like, are you going to try to make it look like that? Are you going to draw a face here? And maybe, you know, that works as a cartoon, basically.
Yeah.
And I think that the line is a little scratchy on some of that stuff. But I do like, there was a lot in here I liked about the art. I think, you know, some of the action scenes were pretty well composed, and it was fun. And it wasn't whatever's going on in the main Star Wars book, which is just photo. So anytime they get away from that, I think I give it credit. And I like the way that they drew the Sarlaccs. I thought that was fun. All right.
Lots of animals that are actually mobile when they're larval and then set down roots.
Yeah.
That's valid.
There's science there in that, is there?
Yep.
Fair enough. All right. So it's the patrons.
I'm gonna get angry.
I know. So there's the three-way tie is what I'm getting at.
Screw you guys.
This week. Yeah, no shit. So the way that this is going to work is there's going to be, this is going to be somewhat abbreviated because we can't do the full thing for each of them. And also there will be a policy change. This has officially resulted in a policy change at iFanboy.
Is this a Kilpatrick approved policy change, or are you just doing this because he can't stop you?
No, he presented it to me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Kilpatrick changing the rules.
He's the only one who's allowed to. I mean, I can present ideas. It doesn't necessarily go anywhere. From now on, when there's a tie, 2-3-4-way, what have you, a coin toss will determine what ends up being the patron pick. It's very difficult to add three extra books on top of everything else and be able to say anything about them. We're going to do all ratings. Three for you this week. Ratings. And give them ratings.
Let's just go straight to ratings.
Okay. The leader for most of the week, the one that I thought was definitely going to be the hands-down champion here, was Ascender number one from Image Comics, story by Jeff Lemire, art by Dustin Nguyen. This is a follow-up to the Descender miniseries, which wrapped up some time ago at Image Comics. Did you read Descender?
I did not. I wanted to. I like those creators. I like Jeff Lemire's writing a lot. I like it. I liked it when he came on the scene. I like it even more now. And I love Dustin Nguyen's art. And I just, for whatever reason, never got that one.
Well, I read 1 to 3 of them. I don't remember. It was a while ago. And I was pretty bored. Because I do like those creators, too. I got very excited about all the names involved with that. But as it went, it was like a... This is going to be a very broad generalization, but it was sort of remind me of one of those Japanese robot comics, Pluto, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's like a little boy who I think was a robot. He helped fix robots. I don't know, but I got kind of bored with it and I wasn't really following, so I dropped off. So when this came up, I thought, oh, okay, I guess I'll try that. There was no effort to start this over as a new thing.
For new
readers. So it was just, you're in a world, there's some things that you may or may not know, but they're gonna go, which made it very hard for me to get a beat on it. How did you feel?
Same.
Yeah. There wasn't much to grab onto here, and I'm sorry. Like, I was about halfway through, and I was like, oh, this has something to do with robots. Like, these aren't, like, those kind of robots that you think might be people, but they're not. That, again, that Japanese comic type. Thing.
I do like the sci-fi conceit of a once spacefaring people that have lost that tech and are now stuck on the planet. Like, mm-hmm. That's always a cool idea, but yes. You're not going to get too deep into that in an issue one. So, and I didn't have the deep history with the series to get me over the hump.
Yeah, so it's really difficult for me to sort of judge it in that way because I didn't really get into the first one. So on its own is the only way that I can kind of look at it. And in that way, I found it sort of impenetrable.
Same.
It looked very nice. I'm sure there's a thing. I'm very much not into this. Like, this kind of comic right now is really difficult for me. I just have not been enjoying. Like, we've created a world. It has its own language and tropes and stuff. You know, there's 1,000 of them. I read them all the time. And occasionally they grab you, but a lot of times they just feel indistinguishable from one another.
I mean, the fact that we didn't talk about it this week, but the fact that, like, Criminal now has, you know, family trees that are as complicated as Westeros, and I'm freaking sure. Lost. Like, if even a crime book is going to get this complicated on me, a book that's designed to be expansive and fantastical is just, there's only so many fantasy realms I can keep in my head at once.
I think that might be it. And when one hooks you and when you get into it, then great, you know, go for it. That's totally fine. But there's so many new ones that it's... You know, I got The Handmaid's Tale, I got Westeros, I got, you know, a dozen other comics.
The Marvel Universe.
Yeah, exactly. It looked really nice. I really love seeing how Dustin Nguyen's art always looks like Dustin Nguyen's art, but it always seems to be evolving.
And I am a sucker for a meticulously drawn panel where the background is just like a splotchy watercolor.
Yeah.
Not even like an image, just like a splotch of watercolor that looks really organic and free.
Yeah.
I love that.
He's great.
Yeah.
No, you're right. It's beautiful. So I can give it that. Ratings.
I'll give it a 3 just because I like the art so much. And but it's most of that is being shouldered by the art. I would say other than that, there was nothing really here for me.
Yeah, I can do the same. I'm not willing to say this is bad. I just don't think it's like walking in, you know, 3/4 of the way through the movie to me. To a movie that I wouldn't have probably gone to see, even if that doesn't mean it's bad. Are you sticking with it?
No.
Nope. All right, moving on. Dick Tracy Forever. From IDW, written and drawn by Michael Avenoming, with colors by Taki Soma. It looked really cool. It's a great cover.
The title doesn't lie for how long it feels like it takes to read when you're in a hurry to get on the microphone with your buddy, Josh.
Yeah. And Connor was like, that won't take long to read. And I was like, oh, great. I opened it and I was like, what are you talking about? Look at all these letters.
I finished the first story and I was like, oh, that wasn't so bad. And then turned the page. No.
And there's three stories in it. I mean, I think you're getting your money's worth on it. What's your take on this?
Again, I did the Mike Allred and family Dick Tracy book with Connor a few weeks back on the show. And I don't have any particular fondness or nostalgia for Dick Tracy. I just, you know, it's an Allred book and it was on the rundown. So I went ahead and read it and enjoyed it fine. And this did not do anything for me.
I really like the art. Largely because I was a big Powers fan and also I was a big fan of Darwin Cook's Spirit, and I felt like this reminded me of those things. But that was about that as far.
That's a good pull. You're spot on with the assessment there.
Oh, there's a lot of Darwin Cook in this, and honestly, Oeming and Cook are almost contemporaries, even though it doesn't feel like it. So I don't think that it's necessarily influenced by him directly, but it gave me that same feeling. So I really liked what it looked like. I don't really care about Dick Tracy either. I wish I did. It seems like the kind of thing that I would like, but every time I've read it, it's kind of the same thing, and I get what it is, and it's fine. I don't know why Tess puts up with this guy. This is my old man stories. I remember when the Dick Tracy movie came out, and I want to say that's 89, same summer as Batman, I believe. And I thought back then, I was like, I kind of dig what this is about. I don't, you know, because I liked the same kind of things I do now. And I bought like a big treasury of Chester Gould Dick Tracy comics, and they looked great, and I remember thinking that back then, but in the end I kind of don't care and that's kind of where I was with this. So ratings,
this one's gonna be lower for me just because the art was good, but I just had an even harder time caring about anything that was happening, and frankly following the stories, even though they were short, I found them a little convoluted and confusing. So I think I'm going 2.
I will go to counter that. That's actually literally how the Chester Gould comics read.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, really. I feel like that's a feature, not a bug. I'm going to go 2.5. Same thing. I think if you like this, you'll like it. If you don't, you won't care. And I'm a little in the middle because I did like looking at it, but not reading it. Not that even it was bad. I just didn't care. I hate saying that on these because it feels like I'm not putting my effort, but that is the honest reaction. Sticking with it, I'm guessing no.
No.
No. Okay, and finally we have Ghost Tree number 1 from IDW Comics, story by Bobby Curno, art by Simon Gain. Did not know what this was, did not have any, had not heard of it, didn't know it's IDW, I had no idea about that, so I went in completely blind, and this was my last thing that I read as I was rushing to get on this call with you, and I actually enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it a lot as well.
Yeah, it's hard to say. It's a Chinese, I think Chinese American family, and there's this kid, and he had a special relationship with his grandfather, and then we cut to the future, and he's an adult, and he's flying back to see his grandmother 10 years after his grandfather had died, and there's family stuff going on, and then there's a ghost tree, there's a tree, which has ghosts near that house. And I could have done, even if there wasn't a sci-fi element, I would have been fine with it. I say this a lot.
I don't even know if it's sci-fi. I think it's spiritual. It's definitely Japanese. I'll tell you that much for free.
Oh, really?
It's not Chinese.
Why did I think that? I think I just
don't know.
Well, it's racism. I mean, let's be honest.
There's a little bit of, I guess it, to me, the architecture of the buildings is like, oh yeah, I've seen that in Usagi Yojimbo.
Right.
And then, the words that he's calling his grandfather, there's like rules in Japanese that have to do with how consonants and vowels are arranged, and it just struck me as more Japanese than Chinese, and I just looked up the words and I was right. It is
okay,
Japanese.
Yeah, no, I think you are right. I also remember I read this very quickly and I did not recognize those words.
And he called one of the spirits a kami, and I'm pretty sure that's a common Japanese spirit.
You're right.
Entity.
No, you're totally right. You're totally right.
But it's Eastern, it's not explicit. If you didn't know, like they never tell you. Things I liked about this, very strong art. I liked the main character's relationship with his grandmother. I like that she's very stern and cold at first, and then like they have this moment where she kind of, you know, softens a little bit.
I really like that bit.
God, that was good. That felt like a really authentic family dynamic that you can't fake that.
Yeah, that's totally true.
And yeah.
I think
there's tree that this family's ghost center around. That's
I think the neat. Reason that I thought it was Chinese, because I think that it reminded me a little bit of the kind of story that Gene Lun Yang would do.
Absolutely.
And so yeah. I might have filled in that blank that way. Either way, you're right. I thought the art was wonderful to look at. Mm-hmm. I don't know who any of these people are, but I wasn't bored. I was patroning. I got to the end, and I swear I was in a hurry, and I was late, and I was like, I want to know what happens next, though. And I thought that was this was a real treat. I want to thank the patrons for that. Ratings.
I'll give this I'm teetering between a 4 and a 4.5.
Okay.
I'll go 4.5.
I'm going to go with a 4. We'll see where we go from there. First issue, not really sure yet. Pretty strong debut. Not the thing I would expect from IDW. So that also made it a nice surprise. Sticking with it?
Yes, actually. I am curious to read the next issue.
As am I. I hope that I don't forget that it's there. So I will try that. All right. We did it. See, we did it. That's right. Not going to happen again. So I hope that you enjoyed that.
See you next week.
We're not out of the water yet. We still got to keep going. How are we doing on time? We're running late. We're going to have to speed. We're going to have to speed right now. All right. So we have our patron powers. We talked about patreon.com/ifanboy earlier. If you are giving a $5 or month a more level, then you, my friend, after you get through the waiting list, like trying to get on the Seven Dwarves mine train at Disney World, will get a patron power. First up, we have Mike Darginio. Mike Darginio. And you know what his deal is? He doesn't have to worry about recycling and sorting, because anything he throws in a trash can will find its way to the correct recycling receptacle.
Oh, that is, I actually feel less guilty.
Uh-huh.
You having said that.
Oh, is this compost? Is this recycling? Is this paper? Is this bottle? Should I do with it? Wait, but this is paper, but it has food in it. And oh God.
I've read articles in the Washington Post just to figure out what my own city's system is,
uh-huh.
and I still get it wrong, and I still get chided for it, and I still feel guilt about it. I'll tell you a deep dark secret, everyone out there in podcast land.
Oh no.
When I'm at my in-laws' house in San Francisco, where there are lots of different trash cans and they're all spread around different parts of the house, and I don't know which one is which, and they're not labeled and it is not clear, I'll just put things in my pocket and wait till I'm out on the street and just put it in a trash can on the corner.
I work, my office is in San Francisco, and I go there and I feel like an idiot.
Yeah.
Every time I have to dispose of something, and it's not that I haven't thought about it, it's that I cannot crack it. And we're not unintelligent individuals, is what I'm getting at. But nope. Listen, Mike has none of these problems.
Mike, that's amazing.
Mike knows it's going to get sorted. It's going to be fine. He's not contributing to the problem.
Wow. Lucky man, Mike. Faulty Rob. This is kind of a neat one. Faulty Rob. Whenever I'm, can I call him Rob, or do I have to go Faulty Rob?
It's there's no space, so I think you have to call him Faulty Rob.
Rusty Auto Parts.
Faulty Rob. Ethnic. Faulty Rob.
Faulty Rob. Whenever Faulty Rob does a kindness, any just like nice favor or kindness to a person, anyone, they give him the exact beverage he was in the mood for at the exact right temperature.
Hmm.
So, like, if he, you know, holds the door for somebody, they just say, hey, thanks for holding the door. Here, have an iced tea. Stops at the crosswalk for a person with a stroller trying to get across the crosswalk when nobody else was stopping.
Mm-hmm.
They hand him a beer. Like, it's just, like, it's some sort of magical thing where as long as he's a kind person, he is instantaneously rewarded with beverages of his choice.
In exactly the right temperature, because that is the key.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you don't want a hot coffee when you want an iced coffee.
Does he have to take it? What if he's like, what if he's walking around Manhattan and he's like, dude, it's so hard to find a bathroom here. I just held the door for somebody back there and I've got a coffee in my one hand already. But
no, I mean, the kindness, empathic power expands to he can just say, oh, thanks, but no thanks. And they'll be like, all right, great.
Okay.
They're just compelled to offer it. He doesn't have to accept it.
That doesn't sound faulty at all. That sounds delightful.
Yeah, it's a good gig.
Mike Blair can turn into any breed of dog that he likes for a total of 28 minutes at a time.
Oh, okay. Mixed breeds or purebreds?
Any kind. Any that kind of dog.
That's a lot. Wolves?
It's just whatever's appropriate for the time. A dog's not a wolf.
Mm.
Wolves are not a dog, I mean.
Mm.
It's a different family. That's what... Listen, my son has a... family's not meaning not right the word, but... Isn't it like the split with like foxes are on the one side and then wolves are on the other? My kid has a National Geographic book that says that I'm right, but I don't know how exactly.
All of those are within the family Canidae.
Family's the wrong
dogs
word.
Are, dogs are a subspecies of wolf, and subspecies is not even a well-defined taxonomic concept. So they're Canis lupus familiaris. They're just an offshoot, a genetic offshoot of wolves.
Listen, but, as this power is not scientific, it doesn't matter. It has to be a dog.
Okay, fair.
It's so, something that we would classify as a dog.
Okay, okay. I'm with you now. I'm with you. I wasn't trying to subvert your power. I was just
honestly,
trying to understand.
I like learning things like this, so I'm fine with it. You're one of the only people in the world I'm okay with being wrong around.
Yeah, well, my wife and I were having a big geographic distribution of cats versus foxes, because it seems like foxes have evolved just to be cats where there weren't cats already, which is kind of cool.
But he can turn into a dog for 28 minutes at a time, no more, no less.
Okay, is it like a poof, he's a dog, or does he actually like physically morph?
I'm going to go with a poof, because if that whole grinding werewolf thing would take up too much of the 28 minutes.
Does he have the mind of, like, does he have the instincts of the dog?
He has all that stuff, but he's still in possession of his conscious will.
Okay.
So he can choose to ignore the dog instinct. He's not like...
So, like, he does get, like, excited when he smells, like, garbage as a dog. It's like, garbage.
There was, like, that, there was an Astro City where the guy turned into a dog or more melded with the dog. It's like that.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Enjoy that one, Mike. That sounds fun.
It does sound fun.
Alex Traherny, I hope I'm saying that right, Alex. No, AX? Is it AX as the typo, or is it Alex?
I'm going to, you talk, and I'm going to tell you how it's supposed to be.
Okay. They have a very simple power. They have an expandable, brightly colored neck frill and can spit toxic poison in the face of their enemies and prey.
Like that one dinosaur did to Nedry?
Yep. Which is not a real thing that dinosaur could do, but it's a real thing that Alex Traherny can do.
Okay. Is that a Dimetrodon?
It was Dilophosaurus. Dilophosaurus. Synapsid and not a dinosaur. Dimetrodon is more closely related to mammals than dinosaurs.
No shit. Yeah. I just knew it started with D, but I haven't. My kids haven't been into it for a little while.
Yeah, Dilophosaurus is a cool Jurassic dinosaur, much bigger than in the movies. Usually the movies scale things up, but in the case of Dilophosaurus, they scaled it down. And there's some people that say maybe they had like toxic saliva, sort of like a Komodo dragon, but there's not really a ton of evidence for it, and there's no evidence for a neck frill, but it is soft tissue, so it might not have preserved, but Alex has it.
On here, I have AEX.
Oh, AX. Okay, AX has it, and he can just do the and the frill comes out. He can use it for sexual display to maybe attract a mate.
Sure.
Or to intimidate his rivals and opponents or prey, and then, he can stun them with toxic spit.
Well, isn't that delightful? That's so nice.
Yeah.
All right, so there's powers for everybody. There's patron picks for everybody. We're running really long. I think I'm going to... Let's touch on this first question real quick, and then we'll call it a day. Peter from BC, British Columbia. Lovely, lovely area. I find myself loving alternative versions of superheroes a lot. Some of my favorite Batman stories, like Paul Pope's Batman Year 100, Chicken's Thrill Killer, and I'm... loving the concept of the Spider-Man series Zdarsky's writing and how it's coming together. What I think I love most of all are stories that are not bogged down by so much continuity and how they're allowed to be a bit more free. So do you like them? Do you have favorites? Are there any alt timeline stories you generally like better than the normal timeline stories? What do you think?
Yes.
Yes. I like them. I like them a lot for many of the same reasons that you do. I assume that you are with me on that.
And I like that they get to have an ending usually, whereas our main characters are, they just, the fight has to always continue. I think if my favorite, and I know I've said it on the show before, so it won't surprise anybody, Red Sun Superman, Russian Superman with Russian Batman with the fuzzy hat.
Uh-huh.
Can't get enough of it. Love that guy. I've been thinking about rereading 1602.
Oh, wow.
Haven't committed to that yet, but I've been thinking about it. It's been on my mind.
Neil Gaiman.
Yep.
Interesting. Interesting.
So
there's two different things going on there. There's the alt version, which is like Squadron Supreme, Watchmen.
Yeah. Okay.
And then there's alternate direct versions, alternate timeline. There's Superman Secret Identity, which is my favorite one that I've read recently that I can think of. Kurt Busiek it's Superman in basically our world where there's no other superheroes and there's but he's aware of there being, it'd be like if somebody woke up right now and what became Superman. Gotham by Gaslight.
Yeah, Gotham by Gaslight is good.
It's a lot.
I mean, really, like, I've rewatched it since it came out on streaming, but Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I mean, Ultimate Spider-Man, really?
Yep, the whole Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, yeah, and of which only Ultimate Spider-Man was really successful for the most part.
Except for the fact that the Ultimates basically became the movie version of the Avengers.
I was about to say. In a way, the Marvel Cinematic Universe is this thing.
Yeah.
It's become, what will happen is if they're too successful, they then become laden in that continuity to begin with. But I think that's one of the great things about comics. I mean, we're mostly talking about superheroes here, but how they, you know, can be other things. Batman is a wonderful example of that. How many different versions of that do we have in movies and animations and comics and what are those malleable, something iconic about that character and that set of ideas around it that means you can put it into different forms and see what happens. I think it's
super weird one that I read as a kid. You know, you talked about getting just like the stacks of comics as a kid. You don't know where they come from and you end up reading them 1,000 times because they're the only ones you have. There's one where Superman Darkseid intercepts the ship, and so he's raised on Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And that one I read a lot, but I don't know that it was particularly that good. And then there's another one where Superman lands in the jungle, and it's just the Jungle Book if Mowgli was Kryptonian, and it's bonkers. Like, he kills Shere Khan with his bare hands, and the Superman cape is Shere Khan's skinned hide.
That's awesome. When was that from?
I've never been able to find this. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, did I hallucinate this as a child? Because I've never found any evidence that it actually existed.
That's pretty good.
Yep.
Well, I like that.
Oh, that's... Nail was classic.
Oh, yeah. Jeez, I forgot about that one. I mean, like, to me, Astro City, that's what Astro City is.
Yeah.
Just a bunch of the Kurt Busiek is excellent at this, by the way.
And Black Hammer, which I think you are still not reading.
Yeah. It's too big.
You'll get right on it eventually.
Yeah, but. I'll totally be right on it. We had another question. I got to put it off. We got to finish. There's more things to do. You want to tell us? There's a lot of podcasts. You were on some of them, and why don't you go?
Sure was.
Them.
Yeah. So we got some podcasts out now for your listening enjoyment. Shazam! Which where's the bolt? Nothing happened. Okay, moving on. That was a film that came out that was discussed by our friends here on the show. Hellboy. That was also a film that came out that was discussed just by Josh.
Very briefly.
Sorry about that. Dog issues.
I don't think you could have added anything to it. And not because of you, just like a movie happened.
Justice League versus the Fatal Five, the latest installment in the Animated Brain Trust series of shows where, yet again, I feel, even when they assure me I'm not, I feel like I'm at odds with my co-hosts because they like a thing different than the way I like a thing, and we have to fight about it. Avengers Endgame is the show I imagine will be either just below or just above this podcast feed.
It will have come out before you listen to this, even though at the time we were saying this, it does not exist.
Wow. That's meta.
Uh-huh.
Is that meta? I don't know. It's quantum.
Meta doesn't mean anything anymore.
I think it's quantum. I think we can say that for sure.
Meta's like meme. It's not a real word anymore.
I know what meme means. We're not getting into it right now.
Exactly.
Coming soon, Joshua, do you have anything for us?
Yeah, there is a Talksplode that I had, a creator interview podcast that I had due for you here in April. And I had it this week. It was ready to go, but it turns out that my subject became ill and was unable to speak, literally, at the time we were supposed to do it. So we're going to do it next week. So it might be a little bit late, but that's coming your way.
Your subject was a dog for the 28 minutes that the interview was supposed to happen.
I mean, it's possible. He could have lied to me. He could have known that was going to happen.
That would render them unable to speak.
Well, but he can choose his timing.
Yeah.
So he was like, I got a hot pooch date tonight, so I can't make it.
Relating the tramp.
Yeah. Look for that next week, is what I'm saying.
And look for it at ifanboy.com, which is where you can find all of the podcasts that exist from the entire archive of this show, which is not insignificant. Find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following ifanboy on Twitter, as well as the newly started ifanboy comics on Instagram, which is where the best of the week panels feature has experienced a rebirth, a triumphant return. You can also follow us individually, J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram. I am at Haupt on Twitter and at Ryan Haupt on Instagram. And Connor is at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
This show is driven primarily by how much you like us. So why don't you tell the machines of podcast distribution how much you like us in the form of ratings and reviews. Or better yet, if you've already done that, pick another show that you really like. Pick some great show, some show someone maybe's never heard of, and tell them about it. Or just share that information. Hey, I dug this. I do dig this. Thanks for this. I've said every, not every day, but almost every day, I will see somebody ask, hey, what's a good comic book podcast to listen to? And people will just, oh, you got to listen to iFanboy. And then they'll usually mention some others as well. So that's the way to do it. We appreciate those of you who do. And thank you very much. Okay. Let's wrap this one up. Thank you for joining me. It was it's much less work to have somebody to talk to.
Team effort.
Mm-hmm.
Here to help. I'm Ryan.
I'm Josh. Where our work is done. Our work is done. We suck the life out of every living thing. Oh, under the sun. Our work is done. Our work is done. Our work is done. Yeah. Our work is done. Yeah. Our work is done. Yeah. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ifanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/ifanboy.